The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide the lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Uncle Heavy late, it's a photo finish.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The winner, Uncle Heavy, he's a three-year-old bred in Pennsylvania.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners or other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Second half. On this Wednesday from Santa Anita, and it's been just a tad quiet this morning. I thought, yesterday was just a jog and a light gallop day. Today they've been a little bit busier in terms of some horses working. A little quiet on the Clocker's Corner front. So, going to get to Bill Gallo. I can tell you that Dick is live into the 3, 4, and 11, 15 minutes to the nightcap at Happy Valley. 15 minutes, and let's take a quick look before we get Bill Gallo in here. Even money on the 4, Beauty Infinity. And if he were to win, this will be a very chalky pick 3, but still better than not cashing. The 3, O-Liner, 7-1, and the 11, Captain Wynn 2-1. So got a couple of short-ish prices in this final leg. So I root home that 3 at 7-1. This the Kowloon City Handicap, and the winner in that 8th, I think paid $6. I've got real trouble here with this now with this laptop. Unbelievable. So annoying. God. Hey. Amazing. Yeah, we may be headed to an Apple store later today to see if they can't amazing. Well, I can tell you that I cannot navigate. Well, Show Respect was the was your 2-1. Yeah, it was $6. Was with Harry Bentley was the 8th race winner. All right, so 13 minutes to the Kowloon. So keep an eye on that, and hope that Dick keeps the string of cashers going. Of course, he had the nice pick 3 2 weeks ago. He had the late double last week, and the big, particularly the big numbers in the nightcap, and he's live here again. Bill Gallo is live with us, and Bill, you know, for somebody that's been around as long as you have, you're still pulling rabbits out of the hat, still surprising and exciting the population. The news yesterday of the peg of my heart stakes. It's going to be a big hit. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Stephen. Thanks for bringing that up. I don't know if it's an accomplishment. It's a great honor that Naira's paying tribute to Miss Diamond, and we're really thrilled about it. She's over the moon, to say the least, but quite deserving. She's got a wonderful relationship with Naira Management for years and years. Has a constant presence in the box area throughout the Saratoga meet, so we couldn't be happier to be a part of the Belmont Festival of Saratoga and be a part of history.
How did this come about?
Well, a little thought came into my head in the middle of the night, and it was way back in December, actually, and I actually reached out to Frank Gabriel. And he thought it was a great idea, and obviously Frank left, and Andrew Offerman took over, and I've been talking to Andrew for the last month or so, and he brought it to management. Management embraced the idea, so that's where it came about. It's something that is important to us for a lot of different reasons. We don't have many grade ones, and strangely enough, one of the reasons I thought of it was because we had already added 2 grade ones to our schedule in 2024. We typically have 5 grade ones for the year, and we added one at the Virginia Gold Cup in May, the first Saturday in May. It's called the Commonwealth Cup. And we added an additional one, which was huge news. We're bringing back the Colonial Cup after a long hiatus. So the Colonial Cup will be held on the second to last weekend of our season in Camden, South Carolina. So by adding the Steinman, we're literally stretching our grade one season. It gives us a total of 8. And I think you had mentioned the Eclipse voters. The Eclipse voters shouldn't have any problem this year determining who the best jumper in the country is.
Well, the long-term, in terms of the long-term placement on the calendar for this, is the Steinman, you know, going to be essentially, you know, locked in on the calendar going forward?
I hope so, yes. In fact, Andrew Offerman did ask that question. And my response was, yeah, I would love to. We would love to be a part of it. The spacing works beautifully, because we have the grade one at Nashville in May, the second weekend in May. So it fits in nicely between the Steinman would fit in permanently nicely between that and the AP Smithwick at Saratoga. We've got the 2 grade ones in Saratoga, the the Smithwick and the Shepherd, and then we followed that up with the Lonesome Glory at Belmont at Aqueduct. So when Belmont reopens, we would love to continue and keep this race on a permanent schedule. Be wonderful. We're racing on a Sunday, the day after the Belmont Stakes, which is a perfect positioning for us. Be the first race on Sunday, June 9, I believe it is. So we are thrilled about it and greatly appreciative to NARA.
Well, this is fun. And so we'll look ahead to 26. And it'll become the first, the first steeplechase event at the new Belmont.
We would hope so. And I Andrew kind of indicated that. More of a question: would we be interested looking forward in 2026? And the answer to that, obviously, is yes—a resounding yes.
Well, and for those that haven't, and I haven't had a chance to mention it yet, but Bloodhorse had a extensive piece. I retweeted it, but we'll have to talk to Andrew soon when we get back. Doesn't have to wait, I guess, till we get back. But Andrew in his second stint with NYRA, and of course he had the period over at Canterbury, and then came back. And And, in terms of timing, it was excellent, in behind Frank Gabriel. And with Frank's departure, Andrew has ascended to Senior Vice President of Racing Operations. And, he was at Canterbury when the Sampsons experimented with the reduced takeout. I mean, he's in tune with, with horse player needs, and he's obviously got a historic perspective and appreciation. So Andrew Offerman, the right guy in the right place at the right time.
Absolutely, and I don't know Andrew well. I don't believe I've ever met him other than telephonically and through email recently, but I'm looking forward to working with him. He seems very open-minded. He clearly recognizes the historical value to steeplechase racing in Saratoga and Belmont. So we're off to a good start with Andrew, and I hope to continue and nurture that relationship.
Well, when you do get to meet him, Be sure you don't confuse him with Ron Anderson with their son, because they look so much alike. It's hysterical. I don't know how many times I have to, it's as if you have twins and you have to like look at them closely to figure out who you're looking at. It's so funny because he said a few different times I've confused the two of them. Just an advisory. So now when you see them, you're gonna. I hope I didn't put that in your head.
I will not mess this up.
I love it. Well, really, I saw the news. I didn't even get a chance to text you, but I was so, so delighted by it, and knowing what it would mean to Mrs. Steinman, and really.
And if you don't mind, I'd like to say a few things about Mrs. Steinman.
Sure, of course.
An incredible woman, to say the least. She's for those that don't know her, she's been around a long time. In fact, we just celebrated her 90th birthday in the Bahamas this winter in February. And try keeping up with her because she hasn't lost a step. But she loves the game of racing. She's been a part of the NYRA scene forever. She goes way back to somewhere around 1970. I first met her in 77, but she had been racing prior to that. Her trainer at the time was a man named Paul Fout, Paul R. Fout, who I think a lot of your listeners might remember that name. She then transitioned to his son, Doug Fout. So she's had horses over the years. In fact, Paul Fout trained a very good filly for her named Colstar, who you might remember.
Sure.
Colstar ran back in, I want to say it was 2000. We were at Churchill's. So she ran, Colstar won $1 million on the turf. She ran in the Breeders' Cup turf. I think she was seventh in the race, but she was quite accomplished. She won a grade one in New York, the Flower Bowl. I remember that. But in addition to that, what she represents, steeplechasing in the people in New York, and particularly in Saratoga, and she's represented it on the highest level. She's a very classy woman that lives in Saratoga for the meet. So I just want to kind of pay tribute to her that way. And the fact that Naira's doing this, and I talked to her. She could barely talk. She was so happy about it. So we're really, really looking forward to it. And as I said earlier, thank you to Naira for doing this.
Really nice. Really, you know, just an amazing. And there needs to be more of this, Bill. The honoring of, you know, patrons of the game and contributors of the game, you know, at every level, while they're, you know, on the right side of the loam, you know, there's too many memorials and not enough, you know, honors.
I'm glad you said that, because I had a similar thought with Jonathan Shepherd, and he had done so much for steeplechasing.
Yep.
And he was such a recognizable personality and trainer, obviously, Hall of Famer. And I went to the New York Turf Riders. We had that grade one for years and years and years, and it was called the New York Turf Riders Cup. And I asked permission. I asked Dave Grenning. Dave couldn't have been nicer about it. And we transitioned the name. We turned it from the New York Turf Riders Cup into the Jonathan Shepherd. Jonathan was alive at the time. And, you know, once again, that's a great honor. It's even better when someone can, enjoy the moment. Of course, now with his passing, it is now called the Jonathan Shepherd Memorial. But Peggy Simon's got a long way to go, so we're going to enjoy this and rejoice with a Beverly R. Steinman.
Well, in addition to the trophy and prize money, does the winner get a vintage Country Squire station wagon?
That's pretty good. She's got about five of those. that's her vehicle of choice, I guess you could say.
It's the greatest.
Maybe the winner gets an invitation to her home in Saratoga for dinner, which is quite an extravaganza. In fact, I'm going to mention that to her. That would be a nice touch. The winning owner come for dinner that night. Winning owner and trainer. You just put another thought in my head, which I'm sure she would love to do. She's a great hostess, just a great woman. You know her, you see her, and she's in the box C33 for years. I have the privilege and the honor of sitting in that box and sharing that box with her on a daily basis. So I kind of operate out of that box for the meet. But it's, you know, just being with her and sharing great racing moments. I went with Miss Steinman. She always kind of has a little bit of an entourage, and luckily I'm always a part of it. But we went and we've seen two Triple Crown winners together at Belmont, obviously. So all my memories with her are just absolutely spectacular.
Well, a society, essentially a society mainstay, both at Saratoga and back in Lancaster as well. So just an absolutely perfect, appropriate honor, and applaud everybody involved in it. Bill, let's also kick off. Joe Clancy provided the season introduction last week to Aiken. Let's talk. Usually that's your bailiwick, so let's get a season preview in from you. We got about 10 minutes, and we can recap Aiken that got the season going, and look ahead to the first early spring events as they work their way up the coast.
Yeah, you know, we opened our season last Saturday in Aiken. It was just a spectacular day. We had they were calling for rain, and it kind of cleared off. It was wonderful. The course was in great shape. We had a really nice race car. They had over 25,000 people in Aiken. It's the largest spring crowd they ever had.
Wow.
So management there they were thrilled with that. And I remind you, which you know, is that that's without betting. Those are tailgaters. So to draw that kind of crowd, we do put on something special at these individual meets. But 25,000, and that's not an exaggerated number. You couldn't get another car on the grounds. But we had a good day of racing. We spread the wealth pretty well. We had five hurdle races and one training flat race, which is like a work for future jump race. But the jump races were split amongst our regulars, Leslie Young, our champion from last year, won a race, and Kerry Breon, of course, won a race, and Ricky Hendricks won a couple of races, and Arch Kingsley, who you know. So the regulars were fired early and fired well. So we're heading to Camden this week. I'm actually in South Carolina for the first portion of the season, so I'm down in Charleston, Cuba Island area. But we're going to we have a wonderful card set for Saturday at Camden. The Carolina Cup is the feature. Small field of four, but it's a really stellar group headed by a horse called Alban. He's a real nice horse, Cape Dalton trains, and we expect some good things from him moving forward. It's owned by Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, and I know she's real excited about the horse. But it's another nice card. Once again, five hurdle races, one flat race. They are expecting a crowd in excess of 30,000. So we're up to a wild start early in the season. The weather forecast looks great, so I fully expect to see a huge crowd in Camden. Then we go to Virginia for a little meet called the Old Dominion the following week. And then one more meet in the South. We go to Tryon, North Carolina, and that's I'll be there. And then I head north for the remainder of our spring season. And then, you know, that we basically start in the South and work our way north. And then we're in the Virginia area. Middleburg, Virginia, in mid-April, and then Foxville in Charlottesville, Virginia. And of course, I mentioned the Virginia Gold Cup is always their Derby Day, first Saturday in May, and they're featuring that Commonwealth Cup. And then a week later, another Grade One, back-to-back Grade Ones, and that's our Richard Strace in your court at 200,000. It's a 3-miler, our longest race of the year. It's a key race on our schedule. And then we close out the spring at Radnor in Pennsylvania, Malvern, Pennsylvania. So it's there's a lot to be excited about. And I should mention, beyond the Naira support, which is wonderful for the summer, Colonial Downs has offered us 19 races. 18 of those are over jumps, hurdles, and there's one flat race for jumpers that we've had for the last couple of years. But we are going to be, and you'll be happy to hear this, we're going to be a part of the paramutual program. And we've got six Thursdays for the jump races. We're going to have three races each day, the first, second, and third race on six Thursdays. It's kind of scattered and spaced over the 9-week meet. The total purse is $950,000 at Colonial. We've got $50,000 maiden races, which is a very large number for us. And the Naira program is at about 8.25. So there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of money on the line for jump horses over the summer. So we are really, really excited about getting this season underway.
Well, and Bill, I'm going to run through those Aiken results because you said something when you mentioned Eclipse, the crossover, and it's a crossover in both directions. Patrick Lewis and his Upland Flats racing. Yep. Patrick was beside himself on Saturday to have the first win of the season, and he bookended the card. There was hidden path with Harry Beswick for Ricky Hendricks to start, and that was the flat the training race, but then won the Imperial Cup with Wes Newton and Beswick as well, which was the feature. The fact that Jordan Wyckoff is a winner on the card, there's another, you know, crossover. As it happens, Patrick has come from the jump side and gotten heavily invested in the flat, starting a partnership in New York that you'll hear about soon. Secret Soulmate won that open maiden for Tom Rice. That was Leslie Young's winner. And Clara Bell for Jordan and Kerry Breon. And Bernie Dalton, that was the handicap. The other maiden race, Chef de Tot, Hurricana Farm for Arch Kingsley. And then you had Hate Blue was the other winner. Haint Blue, Bernie Dalton as well for Leighton Register and Kate won the Filly and Mare hurdle. So a really good start to the season. And as you mentioned, you know, the wins kind of spread around.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the way we like it, quite frankly. And, you know, the feature was an excellent race. Wes Newton was a handicap starting hard weight. Ran a terrific race for Ricky Hendricks. So it was, you couldn't map it out any better than it's been so far. So once again, we're just really, really excited, really looking forward to it. And you know, Nara doing what they did on top of everything else. Just it's been a good week, Steve.
To say the least. And the Carolina Cup on Saturday, and it's a very good six-race card that looks that starts with the Steeplechase Museum race. And we should also mention Blue Ridge has got the point-to-point. That's at Berryville on Saturday. And everything you need to know about any of these stops on the Hunt Circuit leading up to the summer, nationalsteeplechase.com, Jumping with USA on Twitter as well. And Bill, congratulations on the addition of the Peggy. We're going to affectionately call it the Peggy.
And that's good. She'll love that.
What else would you call it? Now, who is designing? It's rare that we get at this level, we get a new trophy introduced.
I know. I've got to talk to her about that. I'm sure she's got something in the basement there.
That's funny. That's actually, you know what? Maybe an old retired, that's a good idea, right? An old retired event cup?
Oh, it will be spectacular. I can assure you that. But we're gonna come up with something.
I'm telling you, some sort of a cup, and then on the top, one of those stylized, like for auto racing, a stylized station wagon on the top. that is the way to do this. It would just be full of mirth. It's just perfect.
I may insist upon that. So that's an excellent idea.
I love it. Bill, great to catch up. And I don't think I've been asked by Woodbury yet, but Tina's booked to come to Nashville, and I'll be there after Derby. So I will.
Oh, that'd be great.
I'll see you there.
I look forward to seeing you. Thank you. Thanks for the time, and thanks for the recognition.
Not at all. NationalSteeplechase.com, everybody. Bill Gallo and Jumping with USA and the new Beverly Steinman, but call her Peg. Just that it's the Peggy. That's the new stake. It's very cool. All right, let's get Mig in here. And didn't talk to Mig last week when we were, I can't even remember honestly where I was. Where was I last Monday? What were we? Were we recapping? When did I get to? I must have still. Oh, I must have. We were at the sale, right? Was that the? Yeah, was that the sale? I think so. Speaking of the sale, I talked to, first thing this morning when I got here, I talked to Mark Glatt And we'll certainly get Glad on while we're here, given we have got a fair amount of mornings to share with you. And I had seen Mark at Ocala. That's why I bring it up. And he said he got some nice. He said he bought four, and he said he spent some real money too. So he's kind of excited about the 2 year olds that he picked up at OBS March. Rich Migliori standing by. Mig, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great. You sound good.
Okay, good, good. I just dropped my car off to get service. I tried to find a nice quiet spot someplace, and I enjoyed hearing Tom Kanush yesterday, and I always like when Hammer's on. Is he on today?
No, he couldn't. He had something. He had a pre-existing appointment, so back tomorrow.
Oh, okay. I was going to talk hiking with him. I did a couple of interviews. I've been off for the last 10 or 11 days. I go back to work tomorrow, America's Day at the races. I'll be back now full time. Got through my winter doldrums, but I got a lot done. Even got found great hay yesterday up in Columbia County. I was so proud of myself because you plan out, right, going into winter, how much hay you need up in the barn to get through the winter. And I'm down to my last 12 bales, which will get me through the weekend. And I was talking to a farmer that I got friendly with on my road. And he said, oh, a friend of mine, he has got some great hay. He's doing it all himself. And I drove up to Columbia County. And, Steve, this hay is half the price of what I've been paying and might be twice as good.
How about that?
It's a score and a half. So I said to the guy, I said, can I throw a couple of bales in my truck? And I just want to make sure my horses are going to eat it fine. And then I'll make an order. And the guy was great. He's like, yeah, don't just go ahead and take it. If they don't eat it, you don't owe me anything. If they like it, just call me and we'll put it on the other end. And so I just called him this morning. I ordered a bunch of hay from him. And I'm actually even going to talk to some of the guys at Belmont because this is the kind of hay that I think racehorses would do well on as well. And I know what everybody's paying per bale. This guy, he's probably got 6,000 bales in this. It looks like an airplane hangar on his property.
How about this? What? How much a bale?
$9 a bale.
Hey.
And listen, I was paying, $16 in a place in Pauling, and then they wanted to charge you for delivery. This guy won't even charge you for delivery.
Well, you've obviously... maybe you shouldn't have said anything. You could have you could have appropriated a container and brought it down to Belmont, and you're like the produce guy. What's the fruit and vegetable? Why do I always forget?
Nothing like the green grocer or something.
Well, you know what I mean. The guy that drives around with the fruit and vegetables on the truck.
Yeah, well, listen, my ace in the hole is nobody knows his name but me.
Unbelievable. This could be like a sidelight, sideline. You could add to your resume.
Yeah, hey, listen. You got in this day and age, you got to hustle. If you're not expanding and growing, you're dying. So I was so tickled. And then I drove up to Saratoga. I got my hair cut from Dominic Filiamio, my barber, Dominic the barber, who Roddy Valenti hooked me up with. And
and his hair, boy, his hair is always perfect.
Well, I get my hair cut every 2 weeks. He gets his hair cut like every other day, I think.
Well, and he must go in. He must go in for the straight razor shave, and because he's always powdered.
Ridiculous.
And oh, big time, big time, right?
Yeah. But I mean, and it's really cool because obviously Roddy and I are friends, and as a matter of fact, today's an anniversary. My 14 years ago today, I rode the last winner of my career for Roddy Valenti, Bruce Levine, on Lots of Stones.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Peter Urton whispered in my ear.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I get a kick out of it. I was on the Taconic. I was in a bad sell area, but I could hear the show. And, you know, listening to Tom, who, by the way, is just a tremendous, interesting guy. I became a really good friend. I enjoyed so much of my time with him. And, you know, for people that don't know, he was a Vietnam War veteran, actually took a bullet to the head. And that's why, you know, if you see his gait, the way he walks, that's because he still has bullet fragments in there. And that was in service of our country. So, you know, this is a true patriot, a guy who, you know, nearly made the ultimate sacrifice. And, you know, very smart, knows every facet of the industry. And I was really fortunate when I was out there to you know, Scotty McCullen had my book, one of the, you know, greatest agents in the history of the game. And we did a lot of good together. Tom had my book. Ron Anderson brought me out there. And Craig O'Brien, who I don't know if you've ever spoken to Craig, he is somebody would be very worthwhile to have sit down with you. I mean, the riders that he worked for, the riders his dad worked for, you know, Manny Yakaza on up. And actually his father is the one who kind of ushered Ron Anderson into being an agent. And Scotty McCullen, like the three of them grew up together, Craig, Scotty, and Ron. And then just thinking, you know, about my time out there, I was there for like 20 months and getting to ride for so many, you know, amazing horse people. And that became friends as well. You know, Bill Spahr, David Hoffman, Vladimir Serin, winning a grade one for Mandela, Janine Sahadi, who my connection and ties go way deeper to with Janine because her dad, Fred Sahadi, Carter Stud Farm, had horses with Tomorrow when even before I started riding. I was getting on horses for Cardiff when I was 14 years old, and we had some really nice two-year-olds, Stop the Music Billy called Tacit Approval, a colt named Karistan by Damascus that we nicknamed Churchill in the barn because we thought we were going to Louisville. We were going to be in the Derby. And he could really run. He broke his maiden by 15 lengths at Hialeah, came back in an allowance race, and won by like a length and a half, and we were disappointed. And he beat Horse of Green Trees. I want to say it was Prince Valiant. He won the Louisiana Derby after that. You know, so like it was just a wonderful, great experience I had out there, and I'm glad I did it. I wish I had done it when I was younger. You know, when I got out there, I obviously could still ride, but I wasn't the rider I once was. It's an interesting thing, right? When you're a young rider, physically, you know, your talents or your gifts carry you. And then as you get older, your physical skills diminish, whether it's just from wear and tear or injuries. But then your experience kind of, you know, compensates for it. And there's a window in every rider's life where they're the perfect blend of that experience and savvy and that physicality. And by the time I got to California, I could always finish on a horse stuff, but my legs weren't what they once were, and I had to rely a lot more on my experience than I could, you know, my physical prowess.
Well, as it happens, what we tried to do yesterday and couldn't pull off, we're going to do now because Tom Knust got the headset on and heard the tail end, Rich, of what you just said, and I got Tom to come down again.
Yeah, but when you came out here, you told me you were 24 years old.
Listen, you know what the definition, Tom, of jockey is? It's a vagabond to cheat, okay? I was jockeying for position, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I used to tell them that when we work horses at Hollywood, I want to drive you over there. And you said, you don't have to go over there, Tom. And I said, yeah, I do, because I want to hear your stories. You had some great stories, a great career, that's for sure.
Well, thank you, Tom. And I was just saying how much I enjoyed not only working with you, but the friendship we developed. And, I was always a very independent rider. Like, I would just go and do my things and touch base with my agent later. So to have someone that, you know, was actually, you know, driving and kind of taking that pressure off of me was a really a treat for me. And I, again, I was very, very blessed to meet the people I met out in California and make friends that I've made, and I consider you one of them.
Yeah, well, I consider you a good friend, and I watch you all the time, and you do such a great job, and you're just a great writer, and what a career you've had, and what a great family you have, and it's just everything, you know, you could ask for somebody within this sport, you are. So I really appreciate having the opportunity to work for you.
Well, thank you, Tom. Listen, I really appreciate that. I got to tell a story. I hope I don't embarrass you, but it was our first day working together. We were over at Hollywood Park, and we hit every barn. We were, you know, shaking the bushes, and your gait that morning was particularly. Oh,
I know exactly what you're going to say.
and you were like, you know, you'd hit little divots and stumble, and we got out to the car. And I said, hey, Tom, I said, listen, I'm pretty easy to work for. I really like to ride, but I have one rule. Don't put me on anything that moves as bad as you.
I remember that day really well. You said, I'll ride anything, but if it goes worse than you do, I don't want to ride it. So,
yeah. Oh.
But, you know, that, I think that shows the comfortability we had with each other immediately, where I could make that, you know, kind of joke.
Oh, sure.
With you
yeah. No, it was pretty funny. And the one thing is, you're the only jockey that really appreciated my driving. All the other jockeys refused to drive with me. So I give you a lot of credit.
I grew up in Brooklyn. You're going to deal with Bell Parkway traffic. I can handle Tom Canoe's driving.
Well, you're one of the few that could.
Yeah. Rich, and you know, Tom was talking about yesterday about you know, coming down the hill and how quickly you took to it. And I remember you telling the story of the one of the first ones you rode down the hill, and you said you didn't even have to. The horse was teaching you what to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because when I was out there, I had a conversation with Lafitte, and he gave me, you know, two things like he really that stood out in the conversation was, don't feel bad if, you know, you don't get the hang of the hill. It took me a couple of years to start, you know, really figuring it out and getting comfortable. And the other one was how to get in with Bill Spahr. And his thing was just show up at Bill's barn every single day at the same time. And don't ask him to ride a horse. Don't ask him to work a horse. And he'll start getting used to you being there at the same time. He'll almost start looking forward to seeing you. And then it'll, you know, start. He'll ask you to get on a horse. It'll go from there. And that was 100% correct. And that's how it worked out. And I consider Bill one of my best friends to this moment. What an incredible horseman. What an incredible guy to ride for. But my first four or five rides down the hill, I was lost. I felt like a cork on the river. I mean, you're coming down to the right, to the left. I really didn't have any clue at all. And Ron McAnally put me on a New Zealand bred, a 7-year-old named Tycoon, spelled different, like T-A-I-K-U-N, something like that. And we broke out of the gate, and basically the horse kind of took a sideways glance at me and said, just relax and sit there. I'll show you how this is done. And he dropped to his right lead, made that little right-handed bend, dropped back to his left. He sipped it through the field. He won easy, and it was like a light bulb. I said, this horse just taught me how to ride the hill. And I wound up winning 15 races down the hill that meet at Santa Anita, more than anybody. David Flores was second with 12.
Well, and then, of course, you got to the Breeders' Cup, and you know, you win a Breeders' Cup down the hill.
Well, that, you know, it's funny because Desert Code was a horse that always laid up, you know, close to the pace. You know, big field, Breeders' Cup. I came out, you know, riding a little bit to get some position. And we went like 100 yards, and he's pinning his ears at me and putting his toes in the ground. I said, man, what's up with this horse, you know? And I just decided that I had to trust him, like he was trying to tell me something. And I put my hands down, and he backed up to second to last. But they went a half in 41-4. I mean, they went 20-3 the first quarter. He was telling me, hey, dummy, I don't want to go this fast. Relax. And I put my hands down, and he just dropped back, and then he came with that run. But the pace was as fast as a pace that I've ever seen.
That way, Tom, you were.
Yeah, and the one thing weird, and that was, I mean, you had a great meet, that meet. But the one thing I was talking to him about when you were a bug rider yesterday, and how you had to leave the Eclipse Award early to go to the barn because you had to get the tack ready and their stuff. And then, then the one thing you hated the most, the one you didn't mind doing the tack, you didn't mind getting on the horses, you don't mind giving all your pay to the guy that had your contract, but the one thing you hated the most was washing his car.
Tom, it just felt so demeaning. It was. I remember one day at Hialeah. I mean, at Gulfstream. We were at Gulfstream. I won three races, and I had to go back to the barn and wash the car. And I kind of have a much better understanding and handle on all that stuff now. A lot of it was to keep you humble, not to get a big head, not to, But when you're a kid and you're winning races, and like, I won the Eclipse Award, it was at the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami. I still didn't have a driver's license. I turned 17 the week of the Eclipse Awards, right? And so Carmela, my wife, drove me there. It was like my prom. I never went to school, so that was my prom, right? And about 9 o'clock, I was like, we got to go because I got to be in the barn at like 4:30 in the morning to have the tack set and the pony ready. And, it was just a different era. And I didn't mind that at all. Like I was back then, I was much more comfortable in the barn than I was speaking in front of people. And I'd be honest with you, I wish I had a do-over because I've become a good public speaker now and I'm comfortable in front of people. But when I was a kid, I wasn't. And my Eclipse speech was horrible. I forgot my agent, Joe Shea, who had Ron Turcotte's book before me. I was paralyzed. I was in such fear. I wish I had a do-over on that one. I would give them a speech they'd remember.
But that trainer had a clean car all the time.
Man, he did have a clean car. But you know what? If it wasn't for him, I would have never got started. Steve DeMauro was coming off of years having horses like Wajum and Dealey Precious, and he was training for all the big names. I mean, he had Meadow Stud and Robert Sangster and Harold Snyder, Cardiff Stud, on and on. I mean, he was training for all the big names. And he started putting me on horses in pressure situations really early on. I mean, he took me to ride the very first Japan Cup on the very one. I was still only 16 years old. I lost my apprentice allowance while I was in Japan. So to have somebody of his stature give you that much confidence and other people go, wow, this guy, Steve DeMauro is going to ride this kid in stakes and take him around the world to different places. It gave me instant credibility. So
I
have such a greater appreciation of it now than maybe I did when, you're pin in your ears because you got to do things that the other apprentice riders aren't doing, right?
And mentioning, glad this came up, and I'm glad we had the chance to do this with you and Tom, because Richie, one thing, I imagine at some point soon you're going to, your name's going to appear on a Hall of Fame ballot, and coming out here, for those that don't realize it, you really added some very nice extra stakes to your resume, including the Kilroe, which I had forgotten that you won with Kip DeVille, and the Pacific Classic, right, for Ropera, Student Council, Millennium.
Yep, Lada.
That you won the Tokyo City, the Affirm, the Baldwin, a whole bunch of...
The Norfolk, grade one.
Dixie Chatter.
Yeah. I appreciate that. And I won three grade ones out there. I had a lot of fun. It definitely revitalized my career because I was coming off of, three or four years in a row where I just, had been getting hurt. And I had some really bad injuries earlier in my career, but, where I was out 6-7 months, but at least they weren't on top of each other. So I had time to come back, rebuild my business, it kind of put it behind me. When you start having them in close proximity to each other, not only are you just continually losing business, people lose confidence in you. They start looking at you like you're different. You're getting a little older, 3 years in a row, you broke something or other. And I had one trainer at Belmont, and I'm not going to say any names because I don't want any ill will to anybody, but My mantra was, I'm going to go to every barn every day. Like, I'm a true believer. You got to look in the mirror. When things are going the wrong way, look at the guy in the mirror and figure out what are you doing that you shouldn't be doing, or what did you stop doing that you were doing when you were successful? It begins and ends with you. So my thing was, well, you're not hitting the barn area like you were. You're maybe not as hungry as you once were. So I decided I was going to get to the track earlier than anybody else, and then I was going to leave later than anybody else. So I can't control if I get an opportunity, but I can control my work ethic, and nobody will outwork me. So I would start at barn one and go through every single barn at Belmont and just give me one. I just want to be in the batting order. Give me one mount. I don't care if I'm batting ninth. At least I'm alive in your barn. And there were trainers that I had done well with that I wasn't riding for. And I went into one of the guys who had 50 horses, and we had had a lot of success in the past, and gave him my pitch. Just give me one. I'm not asking to ride the barn. I'm not asking to ride Ken. Give me one. And he looked at me and he said, no, I'm not going to ride you. And I was like, well, why? We had a lot of success together. And he said, well, why should I ride you with all your battle scars when I could ride a kid that's never been hurt, and I don't have to worry about, you know, how he's doing physically or mentally? And I knew at that moment my career in New York was at a crossroads, because if he was classless enough to say it out loud, other people were thinking it. So I actually got in my car, I drove through the infield, and I'm going to be honest with you, I had tears in my eyes, and I thought, I'm probably just going to retire because, you know, people are just looking at me different. And when I got out of the car over at the main track, I ran into Ron Anderson. And Ron Anderson said, you know, I watch races and you ride a good race. He goes, you're not riding much stock right now. He goes, you ever think of a change of scenery? Why don't you take a shot? Come to California. I'll take your book. He had Garrett at the time. And that's how I wound up going to California. Otherwise, I was going to retire. And I knew I could still ride. I felt like I still had a lot to offer. But I was just being seen differently. And kind of getting back to what you said, you know, someday being on a Hall of Fame ballot, I've kind of given up on that, because it's been 14 years since I rode, and I've never even gotten a sniff, right? And it actually bothers me that I let it bother me for a little while, because I'm a true believer in you place a value on yourself. I've never waited for anybody else's approval and how I've conducted my life and my work ethic. And now I'm getting disappointed because I'm not getting the approval of other people that really don't, honestly, they don't know me fully. They don't know what I had to go through to be a rider. They didn't know the injuries that I had to come back from. I was at Angel Cordero's house a couple of weeks ago, and he said to me, he goes, you know, when you broke your neck in 88, everybody said you were done. He goes, I said you were done. There's no way you're coming back. Is then you came back and you were better. You were hungrier. You were tougher. You had no fear. He goes, nobody comes back from that kind of injury. So I have that kind of respect from my peers. That's enough for me. I'm not going to hold my breath waiting on anybody with the Hall of Fame to consider me.
I understand. But it's a funny process, right? You can, you know, it's an unusual. Very frequently, it's been it's changed several times. We'll have to see about it.
Again, though, yeah. Steve, you know what? Listen, my Hall of Fame is my family, my little farm. You know, the life that I've gotten to lead. The horses have given me everything. I'm honestly not even going to think about it anymore, because also, you know, who's judging you? You got to think about that as well. And I got to judge myself.
Well,
and at the end of the day, as long as I'm comfortable with me.
And I want Tom to talk about, you know, how you'd have to sell guys, when the doubts have creeped in. But I will note, Rich, when you look at what it took Garrett Gomez and Craig Perrett, I mean, you want to talk about, having interminable, bizarre delays. I mean, at getting in, and frankly, there's no way of knowing whether putting Garrett Gomez in on a timely basis might have, frankly, prolonged his life. To be honest,
well,
could have had that
listen,
effect.
We could only
speculate.
It's just such a shame and tragedy. He was such a good guy. And again, we both had Ron at the same time, and I just really got on really well with him. I actually shut him off badly in the Miller Stakes at Hollywood Park. I mean, he tried to slip through on me, and I was like, no. And I bounced him off the fence. And they wound up taking me down. He finished third. I wish he would have finished second. At least he would have got put up. But, and we talked about it afterwards, and it wasn't like, you know, he understood, you know, like old school. You're not letting anybody through, you know. But, you know, he was a tremendous guy. I mean, I will say this, and to be fair, I wish my prime had lasted longer. Like, my prime was actually a pretty short window. When I broke my neck the first time, I came back harder, you know, more focused, more kind of in, you know, I had something to prove. But from that moment, 1988, I never felt the bottom of my feet again. I used to have special boots made with the thinnest soles. And if you look at all my wind pictures from after 1988, my toes are curled around the stirrups because I couldn't feel the stirrups. I had a grip with my toes.
Well, you know, Richard, I've been on the track for 55 years. I've been an agent now for 23 years, and I was racing secretary and trained horses. And as far as I'm concerned, you should be in the Hall of Fame. You are a Hall of Fame, not only a rider, but a Hall of Fame person, too.
Thank you, Tom. And that means more to me than anything. It's just so funny. I had a dream the other night about, I was at the Meadowlands, believe it or not. I was in the locker room at the Meadowlands, and back in the 80s, Meadowlands was a really good meet, and that jockey's room was the best jockey's room that I've ever been in. I mean, it was modern, state-of-the-art, everything was beautiful, and it had a certain almost like new car smell to it. And when I woke up, I could actually feel that. And of course, like, you ride in your first races, I rode my first winter there, and that excitement, and you're starting your career, you've worked so hard for this, and I wish that we could appreciate that more in the moment than we do years later when it's, you know, well past us. Like, you're so intent on making it, and if you win a race, get to the next one and doing the next thing, you almost wish you could go, wow, this is really cool. I'm actually getting to do this.
Well, it's a profession and a career endeavor, really like no other. I suppose boxing is probably the closest. I mean, in terms of life, you know, risking life, there's so few comparisons, really, to, you know, and it's not limited to the afternoons either. I mean, the exercise riders that are imperiled and you know, and hurt, and are just as,
yeah,
you know, just as vulnerable as the riders in the afternoon. It's unique, and you know, people sit in judgment. There's really very few people that you know, that I think, Rich, that's one of the reasons why, you know, your presence on the broadcasts, you know, and JB as well, you know, Jerry and what he does with NBC, it has more, you know, your critique of riders and the explanation of what a rider is encountering, it's just so much more valuable, you know, than, I mean, we can look at rides and we can speculate, but it nobody that hasn't ridden a horse in competition can really know what it's like.
No, you know, listen, I've been off, and so I had an opportunity, like, to watch, and I saw Jerry and Moss. What's his first name? Oh, God, I can't believe I'm starting.
Randy, you mean, or Randy?
Yeah, Randy. And they're so good together. Their chemistry together is so good, and Jerry was so good on that telecast with the Louisiana Derby. And to me, Jerry's one of, like, probably top five riders I ever rode with. But what made Jerry, to me, stand out, differentiated him, his prime lasted, like, his prowess, his height of his prowess lasted longer than any top rider I'd ever saw. I think for about 15 years, he was able to maintain a level of excellence that other guys could reach, and maybe even some might have, you know, been slightly better at certain things. But Jerry was as well-rounded a rider, and the fact that he was able to maintain that level of excellence for that long, to me, is just mind-boggling. And I kind of didn't really understand that or appreciate that until later on, because you know what the difference between somebody riding well and riding, you know, bad is? Riding poorly or riding well is not allowing anybody else's idea or any pressure get to you. So meaning like you're on a favorite, right? And you're sitting in the pocket, you got a lot of horse, and you should just sit in there and just wait and be patient and have nerves of steel. When you're riding well, you don't budge from that spot. The hole presents itself, you get through, you win. It's a good ride on the best horse. When you're riding poorly, you start going, man, if I get stuck in here, I'm going to get criticized. Oh, I'm going to. That's the only difference between riders at a top level riding well or riding poorly, is being able to just do what they know is right, even if they could potentially look like the goat if they get stuck in a spot. When I was riding good, I never listened to anybody. I had not instructions. I didn't care what John Pisen wrote in the Post. I didn't care what Wes Gaffer wrote in the Daily News. When I was riding poorly, I those people would jump in my head at the half mile. Oh shit! If I get stuck here, I'm gonna be, you know, criticized. And Jerry never seemed to succumb to that.
Interesting. Tom, I mean, how do you, when it comes to boosting a rider's confidence, how do you get a rider to get his confidence back?
Well, I think you got to understand the mentality that every day they go out there in the morning and risk their life. Every afternoon they go there, risk their life. So they're all going to have little things that maybe you would say, oh, you know, you'd wish they'd be doing something different. But I think you just have to support them. You just have to have confidence in them. And I think if you have confidence in them, even if they ride a bad race, you're not going to bring it up. You're not going to say anything to them because they know they rode a bad race. So I just think you have their back, and you always have their back. And I think by having their back, you give them confidence, and they're going to do things. And like I say, it's a really risky sport. I mean, it can happen in the morning, it can happen in the afternoon, and that's why they call them accidents. But I think you just have to have the jockey's back, and he knows that you have his back. And no matter what, if people criticize him, you're not going to criticize him.
Well, I always felt comfortable with you like that, Tom. You know, the hardest thing that I had to deal with, and like the danger part never really kind of bothered me whatsoever. I just felt privileged to do it. It was making weight. I mean, making weight changes your perspective and how you look at things. Like things that used to bother me, I can't even tell you why they bothered me anymore. I'm 145 pounds now, and people look at me and go, man, you look like you could still ride. No, I'm 30 pounds heavier, but this is the weight I was probably always supposed to be. And, you know, that messes with your head, and that, you know, your patience level and how you deal with things. I mean, I was blessed that, you know, I had a wife that was very understanding, and my children made me a better person, because your kids don't want to know if you had a bad day at the races or you got beat on favorites, or when you get home, they want to have a catch with dad in the backyard, or, you know, they want to tell you about their day. And when I had to start thinking outside myself and not be as selfish, because being a jockey, a lot of times you have to be selfish to perform at that level, it made me a better person, and honestly, a happier person, a more well-rounded person. Tom, I don't know if you know, one of the things, I have a cottage at Belmont they allow me to use. So I go down from the farm on Thursday mornings, and I stay until Sunday night, and then I drive home. But I'm in a cottage right on the grounds, and I take walks at night. I walk all over Belmont. And I don't know if I told you this, Steve. If I did, you can pull me up. But I was walking around, and I had this memory. My brother, Nick, who's my older brother, brought a girl, his girlfriend, to the races. And we had a horse in the last race for Robert Sangster. A horse came from England named Corianda. And I told him, I said, hey, this horse is going to win. And the horse won. Yeah, I don't know, I paid like $7, $8. And my brother and his new girlfriend, who's now his wife still, bet on the horse, and then they came back to the barn after, and they, you know, I had to cool the horse out. That was one of the things I had to do as the bug boy coming up. And afterwards, they took me to Franklin Square for dinner, to a cookie steak pub. We had dinner. We drove back to Belmont. Back then, women were not allowed on the backstretch after dark. So his girlfriend, his wife now, Joyce, had to stay at the front gate while he dropped me back to the barn. And I even told him, I'll walk home. You know, I'll walk back to the barn from here. It's like 3/4 of a mile, you know. And him being a big brother, like, no, I got to make sure you get in your room okay and everything. And he left his girlfriend at gate 6 by the guard shack, drove me to the barn. I mean, how things have changed. I mean, you know, it's crazy, right? But drove me to the barn, and I actually got emotional thinking about it. I was getting out of the car, and he's 6 years older than me, and he said, hey, he goes, I'm really proud of you. You're doing it. You're really doing it. Like, I think a lot of people thought, you know, I was 14 years old. Oh, this is like a phase. It'll pass. And to have your older brother, like, acknowledge that, man, you're actually doing this, and you're going to make it. Like, it was like that moment. But that's like, you know, at this age, and you're walking around Belmont, you have an opportunity to reflect on these things, you know?
You know, the problem is, if you would have lost, you probably made you walk.
Yeah. I don't think we'd have gone to cookie steak pub.
But you're right. When I was on the track, first on the track, and I was groomed for Reggie Cornell, women could not. You could be the biggest owner in the country, and after dark, you could not go on the backside. So things have changed a lot.
Yeah, I mean, now you have girls' dorms and rooms, which
sure.
it should be, but it's just interesting to think about how things have evolved. You know, I mean, I got to the track 1978, and, you know, over the last 40-some-odd years. But you know what? It's a great life. Wouldn't change anything. I mean, just, you know, the opportunity to have this life with horses and meet amazing people with a shared passion. You know, we're all truly blessed. I mean, I'm talking to you guys. You're out probably at Cocker's Corner with that beautiful backdrop, and I would have never met either one of you if it wasn't for horses right. and racing. And, you know, so your relationships, your friendships, it goes so deep what this game gives us.
It's a great community, that's for sure.
Well, and it's really nice, Rich. And you know, what's one of the things I try to communicate and pass along, you know, with the way we do the show, I mean, obviously, it's an insular listening audience that has an interest, but you know, trying to project to a hopefully a curious outside world, you know, why this is something that needs to be preserved. This is a lifestyle, and it's anachronistic. It's completely foreign to a large portion of society, and we have to, you know, it's incumbent on all of us to try to communicate it to people. And I've maintained that people are intimidated by what this represents, and you know, the danger involved, the high wire act that it is, I think intimidates people, and it shouldn't be that way, and all anybody involved in any equine sport should all be cognizant that the pressures from the outside world threaten them as much as it threatens us. And you know, everybody that makes a living and competes with horses needs to be on the same page in that regard. And you know, we should all be ambassadors, you know, to have people, you know, take an interest or at least understand what this is about.
Well, I 100%. And it's incumbent upon all of us to present the game and show all sides of it. We can't deny the fact that, yes, there's an element of danger. And we've come a long way in limiting that exposure as much as humanly possible, I think. I you're never going to eliminate it. You try to, you know, mitigate it as much as possible. That being said, I wish that I could have people meet me at 5 o'clock in the morning and walk into a barn in the dark, and that beautiful, quiet, you know, atmosphere and the smells and the sounds as the backstretch starts coming to life. And I mean, I love it so much. I'm up at 5 o'clock in the morning every day, no matter what, on my. A dentist that makes house calls, a doctor that makes house calls, a personal valet that turns down their bed two or three times a day, you know, a massage therapist that comes in, a chiropractor. Yeah. I mean, we definitely have come so far and we take care of our horses so well. But if you listen to outside people that aren't informed enough, tell it, we're barbarians that don't like horses. And it's the furthest thing from the truth. So it is our responsibility to, you know, show people what this game is about and how much we love, you know, what we do, but the horses especially.
No, 100%. Well, Rich and Tom, I can't thank you enough for this. I'm already receiving all kinds of feedback from people, and Richie, you know, obviously heartfelt. And this is why I was trying to produce this yesterday with you, with Tom as well. I mean, that was my motivation to have you, you know.
Well, no, listen, I wish I could have done it yesterday. It would have been terrible, though, because I was in such an odd area. We would have kept dropping the call. But, Tom, it's so great to hear your voice. I hope everybody's doing well. Steve, I'll talk to you next week. And thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Richard. We'll see you down the road. Okay, bye.
Outstanding. Rich Migliori and Tom Knust. And I knew that would, right?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. I don't know what we lost Richie for a second there at for a portion, but I think for the most part we got I don't know why he cut out there for a second. I pull up because I want to get Caitlin in and I want to get the recap done because tomorrow and Friday, obviously, we'll start handicapping seriously on the Gulfstream and Oaklawn cards. But terrific job by Caitlin and everybody at Turfway on Saturday. Caitlin Free joins us. Caitlin, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Hope you're doing well.
Doing good. And give us your firsthand reaction had Saturday, Ruby Day.
It was a great day, really, you know, a good day for fans, bettors, everyone on track, some good performances as well. Of course, Endlessly winning the Ruby. I hadn't wrote him off, but I was definitely trying to beat him because I didn't really see the separation between him and the rest of the field at such a short price, but there really, really was. He won quite easily and he won nicely and just kind of really looked like he could run on any type of synthetic or turf surface and be a real graded stakes caliber horse. And I mean, he's unbeaten aside from one effort in the Breeders' Cup, which was still a good effort to some good horses. So he's proven he's grade two, grade one level. But he easily beat that field. And I talked to Abel Cedillo and afterwards, and he basically said, you know, this isn't a dirt horse, and trainer agreed with that. So it doesn't sound like they're going to be going to the Kentucky Derby. Sounds like they're going to still be there on the first Saturday in May, just in a turf race, which doesn't surprise me. Kind of a similar type of path that Major Dude took last year after running second in the Jeff Ruby. But that was obviously a very impressive performance. I would say really the performance of the day for me would probably have been Everland and the Bourbonette Oaks. That filly has just impressed me so, so much over the last few months. She was claimed and really won in spite of herself when she won that maiden 30 that she won. But she's a horse that, interestingly enough, most horses, if they get bumped, if they get in tight, if another horse interferes with them, they just kind of back off and they kind of toil. She's the total opposite. Eric Foster told me that he told the rider that if, you know, if she goes out there and gets in a little bit of trouble, it's going to be great. It's going to be great for her. So she ended up getting in a little bit of trouble on the turn. She kind of got pinched back a little bit, maybe took a little bit of a bump. And I mean, she immediately just geared down and took off after that and really meant business. And I think she's a sneaky player for the Kentucky Oaks if she takes to the dirt.
And I saw that you actually, I think I saw you, or maybe it was Tony actually that that tweeted, do not be dismissive of Everland heading to Kentucky. I mean, she's an Arrogate out of a Tappet mare. We talked about the breeding with Sid Fernando earlier. And, you know, by all rights, she, you know, she's supposed to be able to manage the main track. Certainly I'm looking forward to talking to Eric Foster. He's got to be excited you know, to have this opportunity. And, you know, the other story out of the Ruby with – we had Michael McCarthy yesterday, and, you know, he talked about pointing for the American turf and the stakes, you know, the idea of the turf campaign for the Oscar Performance Son. The other, you know, the other winner coming out of the race is Larry Demarest and West Saratoga getting back to Churchill. And, you know, I know some people are going to think that, you know, he's a cut beneath and you know, doesn't really belong and, you know, probably is better going shorter. But I think it's a fabulous story. I was lucky enough to, you know, to present the trophy for the Iroquois and meet Harry Verrucci. And you know, Larry Demarest is really well-liked and admired, you know, in Kentucky, a long career. And it's very cool that he gets a Derby shot.
We were actually standing in the paddock during that race together. But
that's right. That's right.
Yes, we were.
That's right.
Because you presented the trophy and I did the interview, and I have never heard a negative word about that man ever. He is just one of the most honest, hardworking people you will ever find. And he told me right before that interview, he just said, man, it would be a dream come true, you know, just to get a horse, just to get points and have a chance to get into this race. And I mean, by all accounts, they're in. I think 37 points is 67, excuse me, is going to be absolutely good enough to get him in.
No doubt.
And he is the type of horse that Travis Stone said it best, no matter the surface, no matter the track, no matter the track conditions, this is such an honest horse that he just keeps on coming and coming and coming every time. He may not be good enough to win, but he's going to give you his best every time, and it's usually good to finish second, third, or fourth, and sometimes win. Those are the types of horses that I think you need to look for to fill out Derby Supers at big prices. So I think he's going to be incredibly useful in that race, and he's great at stakes proven over the track.
Well, exactly. I mean, that you know, you get extra points coming back to Churchill if you've already you know, posted accomplishments. I made that case about the other runner-up from the weekend at Fairgrounds. Honor Marie has got that going for him, as it happens.
Very similar type of a horse. Very similar type of a horse. I think those are, you know, going to be, while people are using maybe the Sierra Leones, the Fierceness, the Conquest Warriors of the World to kind of fill out those top spots in their Derby Supers and Tries, those are the types of horses I want to key around.
Well, the couple of other, I haven't had a chance other than mentioning the, you know, some of the winners, but the rest of the stakes action, quick review, Tricari, this was the other Ammerman, one of the two other Oscar Performance winners. This happened to be Graham Motion handling this one for the Ammermans, and terrific. And for those that didn't see the rush away, you know, three horses on the wire with Tricari, Footprint and Twirling Point. I got stymied, Caitlin, virtually throughout the whole card. I had a lot of seconds and a lot of thirds, and this was one of those spots. Footprint winning that photo would have been personally a better result, but that you know, that's what you got to do. You just got to keep swinging at Turfway.
For sure. That was always going to be a good race. I would say maybe that was the race I was most looking forward to, aside from the Ruby, because so many of these horses, the plan was to go to the Ruby, but because there were so many entries, they were excluded based on, you know, stakes earnings in general. So this was really kind of the overflow from those fields. So I'm thinking a lot of those horses are going to turn up in some races on Kentucky Derby Day. I don't think any of them are going to get in the Derby unless they run back, you know, quickly or run in the Lexington or something like that and get an outside chance, which you never know. But Tricari was not one that I dismissed, but not one I had as highly, highly rated as he ran in his performance. So I'd be anxious to see what is next for him. And Great Motion just happened to be there presenting the trophy for the Animal Kingdom Stakes and just picked up another one and had a pretty good day himself. But I think that was the 2000th winner in the career for Roberto Ruiz Bullion. He was so excited.
Oh, that was nice. I had not connected those dots about Graham presenting the trophy for the Animal Kingdom. Good point. You would think that some of these overflow types will end up in the Pat Day Mile.
Right.
You know, we'll see how that shakes out. But Tricari with the Rushaway win, and which I think was the stakes debut. The Harlan's
he
Holiday.
Reminds me of a horse that maybe will turn up in the Virginia Derby or the Secretariat at Colonial or something, because Graham runs a lot of those types at Colonial. So that's what I'm thinking could potentially be a long-term plan for him.
Well, another price on the day came in the Animal Kingdom. Okiro, this was Jose Garofalo coming from Gulfstream for Utaka Enterprises, in fact, I think I saw in Francis Caron and Sid's piece yesterday that was this, I think, Yoshida's first stake winner.
And yes, I think it was. I've been a big fan of the Yoshida progeny over the synthetic a lot. That's kind of been, there's always kind of like a sneaky couple of sires, you know, that you have every meet. Mendelssohn's not really sneaky because everybody knows that he's good on the all weather. For me, last year was somebody like Competitive Edge and a few others. This year, Yoshida has really been one that I've really, really upgraded his progeny trying the surface for the first time. And Travis had this horse picked on top, so he got a big score with him there. But I was really, really impressed from what I saw from him in that race. And Yoshida going back to his native homeland in Japan in a sale may wind up being a mistake yet.
Well, that always happens as soon as these horses get exported. Boom! They become a success. It's kind of funny. That was the Animal Kingdom, was clear winner under Julian Leperu. The other two stakes, Dana's Beauty. Here was the biggest price of the stake sequence, 43-14. Joe Sharp, this for Magic Oaks, a Not This Time mare bred by John Leviakis. And Dana's Beauty, wire to wire under Jose Ortiz. Chasing was favorite and not getting there. Chop Chop, I Tried Forever After All, who was also rallying, but had to settle for third at 22-1. But Dana's Beauty lit it up. Was anybody out in front on this one?
No. I don't think, I'm not sure the connections were either, because Jose's wife Taylor owns this horse. So it's their worst. And I talked to Jose after, before I did the interview, and I was like, did you think that would happen? He goes, well, she won here last time, and this is only the second time I rode her. I rode her at Presque Isle previously, and he said, no, I didn't think she was potentially good enough versus this field, you know, the likes of Botanical and Chop Chop. Chop Chop just wasn't getting there. She ran her typical race. It just was second best that day. I don't know what went up with Botanical. But she was odds on in that race, and she didn't run a step. She looked like she was going to make a move around the turn, but you could just tell that Luan Machado had her under a drive the entire time. I don't know just if she had such a big performance coming off the bench last time out that she maybe had a little bit of a regression coming into that race over the weekend. But yeah, Dana's Beauty, that blew it up, because we got a pretty big carryover for the pick six coming in tonight. I still think it's only a 10%er, but it's up above 100,000. So nobody was able to really connect a bunch of dots on the pick six. And I think that was the separator.
Well, and just looking at let me turn back. Where's my, let's see. I'll tell you. Cause I mean, I
had given up on the multis. I mean, I got my brains beat in. I was watching with one eye from Fairgrounds. The pick four paid 46. This is the pick four that ended with the Ruby. Pick five paid 31,876. Pick four paid 46,69. Yeah. So this was instrumental in driving the pricing, and even Cellist at 1478 was, and I included Cellist in the picks. I did not actually use him prominently in the multi-race tickets, but Cellist, Luis Saez, and Rusty Arnold, and wins the Kentucky Cup Classic.
I thought he was more kind of an underneath type for me. I knew he was capable of winning, but I didn't think he would get there. But I think I also maybe overvalued the two horses that ran 1-2 last year. I liked Verstappen to beat Wolfie's Dynago, so I kind of flipped them. And then I thought Ketadon had a chance to kind of run in there in a big price. Cellist was another one of those. I was thinking that there was going to be enough heat up front early that Wolfie's Dynago was not going to stick around, because I really didn't think he was the same horse. Well, Verstappen's not the same horse as he was last year either. So I just had the wrong one coming from off the pace.
Well, that was... Saturday's Ruby card, and I heard a nice crowd. It was a great atmosphere.
It was a great atmosphere, and really the food, of course, was superb, as it should be. Honestly, you know, the steak, the spread, everything was amazing, but the desserts were out of this and they were conveniently close to mine and Travis's set, so I didn't have to wait in the buffet line. I could just, you know, kind of
reach over.
I was going to the bathroom and grab something.
That's great, Caitlin Free. Everybody, Caitlin E. Free on your Twitter. And what do we? You got something? You got a couple plays tonight? We got about a minute and a half.
Yeah, sure. I'll toss a couple out your way. There's a couple in race number two that I'm thinking are going to get ignored on the board for some of the other kind of more local faces. The 13, Silent Secretary, the all-salvageable. I really like the race she ran last time, trying the surface last time out, was beaten by an odds-on favorite, but almost got there on the wire. She's drawing in as an all-salvageable, so I think she could be forgotten. And positive message, trying the surface for the first time, the Kigman progeny, 47% going a mile or longer on the all-weather here in America. So that one's at 15-1 on the morning line. Don't leave her out. And then Silent Spectre in race number four, trying older horses for the second time and dropping in class. He's going to be carrying 12 pounds less than everyone else, and I think he's going to have a chance to potentially wire this field. And then we've got Proto Magic coming back, trying to get her fifth win in a row.
Excellent. A couple of ideas for the action as they continue with what you've got. How many days left? How many race cards?
Counting tonight, we have four, so we'll be done on Saturday.
Very good. And then you get a little breather after a tremendous winter. Caitlin, thank you.
Thank you.
Caitlin Free, everybody. And a terrific job. We've had a lot of fun. And I assume she's going to be back at, let's see, what she, I'm going to have to ask her with Churchill and then Colonial again, I'm going to guess. Yeah. All right. Well, you'll keep hearing from Caitlin. Back tomorrow. Got to wrap it up. Thanks to Dick Powell. And for Sid, Tom Gallo. Tom Gallo. That's the wrong Gallo. Bill Gallo. Mig, Tom Knust, which was fun. I wanted to get that in yesterday, so I'm glad Tom was nearby. And Caitlin Free. I told Seth, you'll get Seth tomorrow. All right? So if you miss Seth today, you can't go a week without Seth Merrow. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM tomorrow. Archive podcast later. All right? And back with you tomorrow, Thursday edition, as we'll start to dig in. Maybe a live visit from Crafty Jeff Franklin. and Hammer will be back too. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Wednesday, so a little wider set of options on the racing front today. All right, Gulfstream, Tampa, etc. So, good luck if you're playing. I'll talk to you in the morning.
There goes a Buick 49, black sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul. We don't know.